Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ellen Locke here. Today, we'll be checking in with the legislative session in Juneau and with what impacts the latest school funding developments are having on Anchorage and rural schools. Joining us today are KSKA reporter Ann Hillman. Hi. Hi, and KTUU reporter Austin Baird. Thanks for coming in. I think I'd like to start with the latest developments in Juneau, and I'm going to throw this your way, Austin. It looks like the Senate Finance Committee has slashed the state education funds, especially the base allocation. What do you know about this?
Yeah, that's right. The Senate Finance Committee, led by Senator Pete Kelly, Fairbanks Republican, on Thursday cut $47 million of formula funding through the base student allocation. That's the amount of money given to municipalities and boroughs around the state for every student they enroll in their schools. There's a pretty potentially big impact on schools in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and of course also possibly a heavier impact on rural schools, because the way it works is it's multiplied by how much it costs to have a school there. So rural schools in villages and in hub communities would typically get more money than Anchorage, and so it's definitely a big impact, and it totals about 4% of the formula funding overall. And I guess somewhat ironically, this comes a year after the education session, where they finally got this pushed through after years of the teachers union working to get this increase. It could go away just a year later. So
adding to that woe, the House wrestled with its version of a bill which would put the school bond reimbursement, the state amount of school bond reimbursement to cities, on hold for at least 5 years. And on Wednesday and Thursday, they took two votes on this. The House failed to pass a retroactive clause, which would have made that particular law retroactive to January 1st of this year. So we have a big school bond issue coming up in the Anchorage municipal elections. How does the House's action affect that, in your view?
Well, I think it's important first to look back, and if you look at the last fiscal year, the municipality retired about $59 million of school bonds, and this is effectively replacing that. It's not adding something new or adding something additional from what the city's done in the past. It's kind of maintaining the status quo. And if you look at what this means for the municipal election coming up on Tuesday, maybe it adds some incentive for teachers unions or for groups like that to rally and get people out. And of course, municipal races are not known for high turnout. Looking back at 2012, there was like 36% of registered voters turned out, and that was like 10% of the city overall, and it was even less than that the time before. So maybe it has an impact in that way of just giving some motivation to the groups that are likeliest to show up anyway. But another reason for that group to show up and vote.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn this to Ann now, because you cover the school board in Anchorage, so you're probably right up with what the school district would like to see in these school bonds.
So the school bond is, again, for $59 million. And basically, with what was just passed or what's going through the legislature right now, this could be the last of the school bonds that gets 60 to 70% of reimbursement, because it's not retroactive. So basically, what was put on the ballot is what's on the ballot. And what they're asking for is they're asking for money to do some major renovations at four different elementary schools: Gladys Wood, Mountain View, Rabbit Creek, and Turnagain. So a lot of renovations inside, changing some of the open floor plans that were designed back in the 1970s, and just modernizing them, as well as doing a lot of deferred maintenance. And so the argument on behalf of the schools, I guess it should also be added that they want to do roofing projects at Fire Lake and at West and then East High Bus Loop. So the idea is that, okay, we can get this money now, we should use it now, because if you keep pushing this off, it'll just end up costing more and more money down the line. And that's what the advocates are saying.
Right, and delayed maintenance costs, that kind of thing. If the bonds reimbursement goes on hold for 5 years, that's a lot of delayed maintenance. I was going to say, I think you could answer this, now that the clause which would make the bond on hold back retroactive to the first of this year, that is not going, so that would make Anchorage the last school district to actually receive the state reimbursement funds. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so that's a lot of the argument of why people are saying, okay, do this now, do this now. There are also, I mean, other arguments in favor are things like, okay, if we do this now and it's reimbursed, basically what that equates for property taxes is about $5 to $6 per $100,000 of value of your house. So like if you have a $300,000 house, then you're gonna end up paying, you know, $15 to $20 per year in taxes additionally for this bond. So I mean, those are the arguments for it. The arguments against it are, do we need to be getting this much more money and putting this much more money into the school districts? Because some people say, you know, we're spending too much on the schools. We, in a time of fiscal crisis, it needs to go to other uses.
All right. So it's going to be an interesting election, especially in this time of fiscal crisis. And there's so many drastic cuts coming down. I mean, the Senate is right now debating the operating budget. And this week, there were quite a number of cuts to educational programs, school funding, the base allocation, as we've already mentioned. And to wrestle with this huge deficit is usually the reason why the Senate and the legislature are cutting so deeply. But in other areas of the state, like Dillingham, there's a lot of small impacts. We did a story this week where in Dillingham, the funding for broadband services is being cut right at a time when students are taking online tests, mandatory state progress tests. And because these rural schools have such small ability to download, that puts the students in a bind because they often cannot even get into the website they need to get into to take the test. So there's myriads and myriads of small, detailed impacts to small schools, big schools, schools all over the state. So I'd like to move on to some other topics here. But before we move on, let's go to the school board. You have been covering school board. And what are you hearing from the school board members themselves? Is there a cohesiveness on what they want in this election? Or are there any comments against the school bond from the board itself?
I haven't heard any from the school board itself. I've heard it from people who are running from school board, definitely. And you hear bits in the community. I think conversations on the school board are focused less on the bond and more on, okay, here's all overall budget picture. Because as we discussed, the proposed cuts as they stand right now, of course, they could be different by the time 5 minutes from now. But as they stand now, the school district in Anchorage is looking to lose about $30 million. And so what that looks like, what that could look like is 300 positions. And so what the issue comes in, and this is the conversation that's been happening a lot, is, all right, the school board passed their budget. In their budget, they added in all of these teaching positions because they said, we're going to base our budget on HB 278. And that's the funding bill that was passed last year. And so now you have the legislature saying, no, hold your horses. We're cutting back on the base student allocation. We're cutting back on this one-time funding. And so what the school board needs to focus on now is coming up with a plan B. Okay, we wanted more of these teacher positions. We wanted to maintain all of these great pilot programs that they're doing for promoting early education. And now they can't necessarily do that. So on April 6th, that's Monday, they will be talking about what potential cuts they're going to have to make. And that kind of then just leads into this next conversation that they've been having throughout this course of the year of, okay, now we don't have forward funding anymore due to the change in HB 278. what kind of confidence and what kind of reassurance can we give to our teachers? Because teachers aren't wanting to work in the school district because they don't know if they're going to have jobs. It could be like last year when all these pink slips were issued.
Right. So the good news is the bonds are being reimbursed. The bad news is the cuts are going to hurt deeply. Austin, and do you have anything else you'd like to add to this school discussion regarding the upcoming cuts?
Well,
before we change topics,
maybe one thing to just keep in mind is this is the first round of this. This will happen again next year, probably more so. This all comes down to the forecasted price of Alaska North Slope crude. That's what it comes down to. And so what do you do this year? What do you do next year? What do you do beyond that if it stays low and the state's operating budget remains as horrible as it is right now?
Although the state is thinking about other revenue sources, I mean, there's a lot of folks coming out saying, okay, we're actually getting a lot of revenue from investment, not just from oil. So does that mean we need to restructure where we're pulling money from? So, I mean, yeah, this is a perpetual conversation. Yeah.
Oh, I've been through this conversation for about 40 years now, so.
I think it's also, while we're on the topic of education, okay, important to focus on some of the smaller programs that are getting cut. So a lot of the early learning programs are being cut. So
yes.
Best Beginnings, Parents as Teacher, the Statewide Literacy Project. A lot of these are just getting cut from the budget. And so when we're talking about rural areas, this impacts rural areas, this impacts urban areas. I mean, most people know that the studies show early learning is really get you prepared to enter the schools. And so this has impacts statewide.
Right, we understand that, but right now it's up to the Senate and we haven't figured out what they're gonna do yet. It's on the floor, a vote is on the operating budget is underway, or a debate on the operating budget is underway. I'd like to change topics briefly. There was an incident, this is a very compelling incident actually, last week, some Anchorage refugees from the Sudan woke up to find their cars defaced, the tires deflated, and some nasty messages written on the windows. They did call the APD, but apparently an officer never came out to check, and there was apparently a miscommunication problem. The Sudanese refugees, you know, English is not their first language. And the police later apologized, but it did highlight that language barrier problem between recent refugees who have moved to Anchorage and city officials. There's always a miscommunication there. And I'd like us to listen to a report by Alaska Public Media's Eric Keto, which highlights that and tells us what one organization is doing in Anchorage to help bridge that language gap.
When I first got here, I didn't have any knowledge about it, you know. So I was like a child, you know, a helpless child.
That's Hari Kafle, a former refugee who arrived in Anchorage from Bhutan 5 years ago. He's now a U.S. citizen and helps new refugees find homes in Alaska. 147 refugees arrived in Anchorage last year.
You know, we have refugees from all over the world. We have refugees from Bhutan, refugees from Iraq, refugees from Sudan, from Somalia. So, you know, almost all over the world.
Most refugees who arrive in the U.S. are fleeing political, religious, or ethnic persecution in their home countries. Once in the United States, the newly arrived refugees face a different set of challenges.
In order to get started, you know, they need a lot of, you know, help in the beginning with paperwork, for advocacy, you know, to connect with community resources.
Refugees don't face these difficulties alone. Issa Brayman helps teach classes for the new arrivals at the Welcome Center, operated by Catholic Social Services, the only federally funded resettlement program in Alaska.
Americans, they want to learn your name. We want to learn your names. And when you say them very quickly, it's hard for us to understand them. Okay, go ahead and talk to somebody. Let's have Andreas turn around. Ahmed, turn around.
I rarely have an arrival come that says, oh, I want to sit at home and get used to my new life. And so refugees come and they have that drive. They want to start working because there's no, can you imagine living 20 years in a camp and someone told you you can't work for 20 years and you want to work and you're able to work and you want to provide for your family and you can't. So when you step on U.S. soil and someone tells you, you have to go to work. They're like, I know, I want to. I've been wanting to work for 20 years. Someone finally is gonna let me work.
Yes, I can work how many hours? 40 hours. Yes, I can work 40 hours.
When he looks back over the past 5 years in Anchorage, Hari understands that the transition from refugee to U.S. citizen is not always easy.
It's a place for opportunity. It's a great place for opportunity, a great place of opportunity for people, you know, for immigrants. But in the beginning, you know, I was hopeless. I didn't have, you know, that thinking because everything was different. You know, even if I speak English, you know, it was very challenging for me in the beginning, but now I'm comfortable, you know, and I'm able to help other people. So, which is great, I'm very much proud.
How long have you been in Alaska?
2 months.
2 months. Do you like Alaska? Is it good?
Good.
It's good? Is it cold?
No.
No, it's not cold. Okay, good.
For Alaska Public Media, I'm Eric Keto.
And that is Alaska Public Media's Eric Keto, as he just said. Every year, about 100 refugees are brought over to Alaska, thanks to Catholic Social Services. And I'd like to turn to Ann Hillman. You actually volunteer for the language program we just heard about. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
I don't volunteer with the language program. I volunteer, they've got this what's called a family mentorship program. So individuals are matched up with families who have recently arrived and sort of act as not really an ambassador, but someone who can be like, oh, this is how you go to when you go to the grocery store, this is how you do price comparisons. Or sometimes we bake cakes, or I take them out hiking on different trails. And so it's actually been so great to get to work with Catholic Social Services and learn about the refugee program, because they're individuals who have been resettled here. They go through this very long process, sometimes decades, of living in refugee camps in countries outside of their home, and they can't return home. So going through the UNHCR and interviews and security checks and so many different processes, they get placed with different resettlement organizations throughout the US. The US takes more refugees than any other country. And I've learned all of this through people like Issa Brahman and others who are working at Catholic Social Services. So it's a great way to learn about another culture. Or for me, my second language is Swahili, because I used to live in East Africa.
Right, you've been in the Sudan.
Yeah, so I used to work in South Sudan. I used to work in Tanzania. And so I have a little bit of experience with East Africans, but it's so much fun. It's such a diverse place. I mean, we talk about Anchorage being diverse. Think about living in a country where there's 140 different tribes, and everyone's got their own local language, and then you've got unifying languages. So, you know, working with Catholic Social Services is this great way to learn more about a country and then also help, yeah, because the United States is kind of weird sometimes. I mean, I'm sure all of you guys have experienced things where you're like, I just don't understand, so.
And the immigration process alone can be nightmarish for however people are arriving as a refugee or any other way. It's 100 forms, interviews, preparing for the test, all this other stuff, so. Mm-hmm. Certainly interesting and good that Catholic Social Services does that and fills that void.
And the great thing is I feel like after the incident that happened in Spinard last weekend, the community is trying to come together and show their support. There's a potluck that's going on that We Are Anchorage, which is a new organization, is hosting. But they may be hosting it, but I've gotten so many notices about it because people really do want to show that there's ways to come together.
Right, and to recap a little bit, the Anchorage Police Department has issued an apology. They have sent out an investigator, and they are investigating the incident, which was debatable in the beginning as to whether it was a vandalism or a hate crime, and by the definition the FBI puts out, it was not a hate crime. However, I think the good news is that the community has rallied and has made these five men living together, feel very welcome. And so that is maybe the best outcome right now. Speaking of Anchorage, we have a very important city election coming up, only next week, the 7th. How do the recently arrived people, immigrants, refugees. How do they sway the vote at some point? I mean, I know we have, do we have voting blocks of Hispanics or Sudanese? Would you be able to address that, Austin?
I think looking at it, it's not one that I've really delved into too much. Looking at immigrants in the process, of course, you would need to become a citizen and go through all of that. But I would say certainly if you just look at the forums that all the candidates have been going to, there's been a Samoan forum. There have been forums just representing all different aspects of the community, and that certainly gives some credence to the idea that candidates think that there are voting blocks that are kind of built around ethnicity and the culture that people are tied to. And I know I remember the East Anchorage Forum with the Samoan community and one with the Russian community also, and you see that a lot of diversity certainly. So
right, and speaking again, maybe Anne, you could add to this. Are you in your reporting through the city? Are you hearing that at all? That there are certain candidates that may be reaching out to different ethnicities for a little voter boost?
I think that all of the candidates, because again, it's come up so many times, that it's not, okay, let's go for this particular group or let's go for that particular group. The whole idea is, and this has been, people have been pushing it for the past year, is that Anchorage is diverse. And so we have, I mean, you hear it a bazillion times, there's 90 plus languages in the Anchorage school districts. And so the idea is not that to appeal, okay, we want these voters, we want those voters. The idea is to recognize that the diversity in Anchorage really is such a positive thing in so many ways, so long as people start communicating with one another and recognizing that. And I feel like a lot of the mayoral and the school board candidates have touched on that, because it's a great reality of the city. And so, yeah, you have to acknowledge, okay, it's not just one perspective that we need to look to. It's not just one group that we need to make sure succeeds.
Right, and that's where the schools can come in and really start helping children from different ethnic backgrounds who many of them are refugees and getting used to the United States, and especially getting used to Alaska, and another reason to expand our schools and expand our teachers and our school curriculums, which are, you know, in a precarious position right now.
So just recently, I guess it was actually a few months back now, the NAACP hosted a meeting and brought in a couple experts. As part of a year ago, President Obama announced a movement to really help young men of color succeed. And so they're trying to strengthen that within the Anchorage schools as well. And so the experts presented a lot of ideas, like, really like having mentors from outside of the school and having role models and going in and asking young men and young women of color what their needs are, what their needs are that aren't being met. And so, yeah, I think it's an ongoing conversation. It's the beginning of an ongoing conversation that a lot of people in Anchorage and probably around the state feel like need to happen for the health of the community.
True. And it will be some very interesting times ahead for Anchorage. Austin, you have anything to add to that?
Well, I mean, I think I would just say from a pragmatic point of view, certainly every politician would count any vote the same. And there's an element of that. And I would say that that's certainly drawn the leading mayoral candidates to all of these forums to an extent. They would like Samoan votes, Korean votes, lifelong Alaskan votes, everyone that they can corral and get out to the polls for them on Tuesday. And
right. Well, and we are, of course, at Alaska Public Media, are following the election very carefully. You can see candidate profiles on our website, alaskapublic.org. Well, it looks like we have finally run out of time here. I would like to do a quick round. Anything else you'd like to bring up really quick before we sign off for the day?
You know, I guess I would throw out just some napkin kind of barroom math, not exact, but If you looked at the deficit that the state faces, they could afford about 90 of the legislative information offices that is in downtown Anchorage right now. So I guess to keep some perspective on what the state is up against this year and next, and hopefully not too much longer, but for a while.
Well, everyone compares this particular financial issue to back in 84 when the oil industry, but everyone is different. I believe everyone is different, and we will find our way through this like we found our way through all the others. Well, that's about all the time we have for Alaska Edition, and I would like to thank my guests, Ann Hillman.
Thank you.
And Austin Baird.
Happy
for
to be
joining
here.
Me. And we will see you next week right here at Alaska Public Media.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.